GTD forecast from the National Weather Service, a wind chill advisory in effect until noon today. A high of just 3 above, wind chill values this morning running between 15 and 25 below, west winds at 10 to 15, scattered flurries, a chance of snow showers late this afternoon, partly cloudy and cold tonight, even colder than last night, a low of 9 below. Then for tomorrow, partly sunny and cold, a high near 8 above. Tomorrow night, a low of around 0. For Sunday, partly cloudy and cold, a high near 10 above. Snow developing after midnight Sunday and continuing into Monday and Monday night. Several inches are promised by the National Weather Service with some lake effect. Right now, sunshine, a temperature reading of 7 below in both Kenosha and Racine. Lake Geneva reporting 11 below. I'm David Cole, WGTD News. The Morning Show with Greg Berg is coming up.
Support for WGTD comes from Jack Andrea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2018. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information at jackandrea.com. Jack Andrea, a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. And we welcome you to the Friday morning show. I'm Gregory Berg. The most exciting and intriguing facets of the Foxconn development is an ancillary project which they have created called Smart Cities, Smart Futures, in which they are anxious to help support some of the most intriguing, interesting, new ideas emerging from this area and from all around the state of Wisconsin, for that matter. And they are putting forth a fair amount of money to try to support some of these intriguing ideas and help bring them to ultimate fruition. And not long ago, an announcement was made of who were the, in a sense, winners of the first round of the Smart City, Smart Futures competition. That is, the people who had put forth to Foxconn the ideas that they deemed to be meriting further attention. And so these 88 first-round winners move on to a second round in which their ideas will be given further scrutiny, and from there that list will be winnowed down still further as Foxconn continues to try to lift up great ideas from people in our community and surrounding areas. Two of the winners from the first round had affiliation with Carthage College, and one of them joins me for this portion of the morning show. Her name is Erin McGinnis, and she just graduated from Carthage this past May with a degree in neuroscience. And we are going to be talking about the idea that she has submitted to the Foxconn Smart Cities, Smart Futures competition. An idea for a biofeedback device, which she calls the Calmlet, sort of a bracelet-like device, but it would make a real difference for people who might benefit from biofeedback. And so we have lots to talk about, and I appreciate Erin McGinnis finding her way to the WGTD studios to have this conversation. Erin McGinnis, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Glad to have you here, and congratulations on your success in the Smart Cities, Smart Futures competition. Before we get to what you proposed and kind of what this experience thus far has been like, I think our listeners would enjoy just getting to know you, who you are, where you come from, and maybe ultimately what led to your interest in as daunting a field as neuroscience.
Absolutely. So I grew up in Pewaukee, Wisconsin, and growing up, I was very active, involved with my community. Then in high school, I was actually diagnosed with a condition called POTS, which stands for Postural Orthostatic Tachycardia Syndrome, which is a form of dysautonomia. And this really drove my passion for medicine and delving into neuroscience.
And can you explain that last term? It's a form of what?
Dysautonomia.
And what does that mean?
So if you break it down, dys can mean not, and then autonomia stands for autonomic nervous system. So that nervous system is what controls all of those automatic functions of our body. So if you think of digestion, circulation, temperature regulation, or anything else that you don't have to consciously focus on, that your body does. So for me, that has been mismanaged in my body. And at the time when I was diagnosed, there wasn't much research or really much understanding of this condition, despite affecting 1 in 100 people.
Wow. It's something I don't believe I've even heard of, but I'm especially shocked and dismayed given what you just said about how actually prevalent this condition is. Can I ask the ways in which it has tended to affect you? I mean, what are the ways in which your daily life has been affected by this?
Absolutely. So in high school, I actually had to attend part-time for the good portion of the first 2 years. I had incredible teachers and a good school board that helped me to be able to graduate on time, continue with my schooling. But in the meantime, I was attending hundreds and hundreds of doctor's appointments just trying to figure out what was going on in my body.
What kind of symptoms were you displaying that really indicated that something was wrong?
So it initially started out with digestive issues, and this happened in the fall, so we assumed that it might be the flu or just some sort of a bug going on. But then it prevailed with severe levels of fatigue, decreased abilities to concentrate, and massive amounts of pain. And at that point, with continuous kind of perpetuation of these severe symptoms, we realized that it wasn't just something minor or acute. And since then, I've really had to delve and explore into what solutions would help my individual body.
Right. So how is a diagnosis of POTS secured? I mean, what kind of a test ultimately does the body undergo that demonstrates that this is what's going on?
So for POTS, you would do a tilt table test, which is where you lie down on a board, you get strapped in, have lots of different probes and sensors monitoring your biological functioning.
How fun.
Completely. And then the table ends up tilting upright. And as it does so, in a normal person's body, their veins constrict to push blood back up to your heart. And someone that has POTS, their veins don't do that effectively. Therefore, blood pools in our feet, and we might pass out.
And so when this happens, this is an indication then to those doing the testing that this particular issue is a problem in your body then.
Yes. So the secondary mechanism for us would end up kicking in kind of as an emergency response system, and that would result in an increased heart rate. To try to keep us from falling down.
Right.
So that increased heart rate is really that diagnostic criteria for POTS, which is just one of many conditions under the dysautonomia overhead umbrella.
Interesting. Is this something that presumably you developed, that you were not born with? Maybe you were born with a propensity, but it sounds like you lived out most of your childhood without these issues or without these symptoms.
Growing up, I was very athletic, and that can mask a lot of these symptoms. So a main kind of recommendation for treatment and to help manage this condition is exercise. But without the ability to stand up or have your body be regulated well, that's very difficult for a lot of people with this condition. Looking back, there were definitely signs that may have indicated that I may have a disposition for this condition, or some things might not be functioning 100%, but those occurrences just seem normal to me because I didn't know any better. And
right.
It didn't dramatically affect my life growing up, so it wasn't investigated.
Right. Is this something that has run in your family at all? Does POTS tend to be a part of a family tree, or are you kind of the first one of your family to demonstrate symptoms like this?
I'm the first one in my immediate family to demonstrate symptoms like this. If I look out at some of my cousins, there are definitely hypermobility, for instance, is a comorbidity with POTS that frequently occurs, and I know at least some of my cousins have that.
Mm-hmm.
So there could be some genetic link. However, in research, that hasn't been found yet. I do know quite a few other families who the mother and all of their children might have it, or 3 out of 4 of their children might have it.
Wow.
But luckily for my family, it's just me and the rest of them are healthy.
Lucky for them, unlucky yes. for you. So the fact that you have been dealing with this mm-hmm. then, if I understand correctly, is what really has prompted you to want to pursue, or why you pursued a degree in neuroscience. You wanted to be in a position to study this in a really serious way.
Exactly. And going through just all of the different appointments and down this whole medical path myself, a lot of understanding your body when even physicians have a hard time doing so is through that self-discovery process. So in high school, I was delving into research articles and just trying to learn everything I could to try to help myself get through the day.
Mm. Wow. So that feels like one of the best reasons to choose a field of study. And I think you said earlier that POTS is actually something we still don't understand all that well. It sounds like despite its preponderance in the population, it has not been studied all that mm-hmm. extensively.
Yes. However, in the past 7 years, there has been a dramatic increase in research, heavily in part due to an organization called Dysautonomia International, which has individually raised almost $1 million put into research to investigate these types of conditions.
Hmm. Wow. Can you take apart the term neuroscience, which is the major with which you graduated from Carthage this past mm-hmm. spring? It just occurs to me now that I don't think I suspect a lot of our listeners as well, don't mm-hmm. necessarily understand what that term really represents and what that field is really all about.
So neuroscience, especially in recent years, has been able to branch out into a lot of different spectrums. So at its core, it's really understanding the brain and the neurological system, including our spinal cords and all of the other extending nerves that we have. In neuroscience, there is opportunity to branch out into business and marketing. It can have more of a psychological perspective to it. Understanding people's behavior. Hmm. But then it's partnering psychology with biology. So understanding the molecular structure or even different pathways, how different chemicals might interact and interfere with these neurological pathways and how our brain and nervous system is able to function the way it does.
Wow. And I'm assuming that as you undertook this degree at Carthage, this pathway of study, that you shared with your professors your own personal story mm-hmm. and what it was you were, in a sense, most anxious to focus on through your studies.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah. And in addition to that, I also had different plans in place to make sure if there was a flare-up with my condition that they would be able to work with me. And they had that understanding, which is one of the key reasons why I chose Carthage, a small private liberal arts college, just so I'd be able to have that personal relationship with my professors, which I've been able to establish with many of them and has been a great choice and fit for me.
Fantastic. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Erin McGinnis, who just graduated in May from Carthage with a degree in neuroscience. And as you have just been hearing, what really prompted her to explore the field of neuroscience was the fact that she's had to run a rather difficult gauntlet in her own life after being diagnosed with a syndrome called POTS, which involves her own body's inability, in a sense, to carry out certain natural functions, compensatory functions that for most of us happen without any sort of conscious thought whatsoever. But her body does not necessarily want to do those things, and it can lead to an array of symptoms. So she pursued the study of neuroscience in order to explore that further and maybe understand some of the fundamental building blocks of how the nervous system works and what is going wrong when things go wrong. So the reason, again, that we invited you onto the morning show, Aaron McGinnis, is because of your participation in something developed by Foxconn called the Smart Cities, Smart Futures Initiative. And ahead of us talking about what you have done in this competition, maybe you could explain to our listeners a little further what this is all about. The overall program, Smart Cities, Smart Futures.
Absolutely. So we have Foxconn coming in right around the corner in the near future, and they have really brought a new sense of energy to the area in terms of encouraging different innovations, especially taking place in Wisconsin. And this whole initiative is focused on helping people understand how technology can be integrated with their lives to help them live a better life. I'm particularly focused on the health side of this, but they have submissions all across the board in terms of technology and just ways that technology can be integrated with these new innovative ideas to help our communities.
So how is it you found out about this competition?
I actually found out about it from one of my neuroscience professors, Dr. Cook Snyder. She forwarded an email to me with the description of this competition. She has known about Calmlet and my interest in the startup realm for quite a while and has been really supportive with that. So I'm glad that she passed that information along to me.
Very good. So you already had an idea.
Yes.
And it is an idea that seemed to be really a perfect fit for what Foxconn was seeking out in terms of innovative ideas. So let's talk about this thing called the Calmlet, which is, of course, a play on the word bracelet. So tell us more about Calmlet and particularly when and under what circumstances you first began to get this idea and sort of bring it to life.
Absolutely. So Calmlet is a smart bracelet biofeedback device paired with a community-based app that helps people manage overwhelming stress and anxiety in the moment so they can live their optimal life. I came up with the idea during my freshman year of college, actually, and it's based on different biofeedback systems that I actually use to help manage my condition POTS. When the autonomic nervous system is overactivated or not functioning properly, as in POTS, and also in the case for people that are experiencing anxiety or have an anxiety disorder, there are different mechanisms that we can change behaviorally to interfere with that system to try to help it calm back down or be able to function better. So when I was quite ill with POTS, I explored some of these different biofeedback
it's okay. We'll figure it out later. That's fine.
Some of these biofeedback techniques to help manage digestion or pain. And I realized that that same system applies to all of these people that have an anxiety disorder. And there are 40 million Americans, almost one-fifth of our population, that have a diagnosed anxiety disorder.
I can think of a number of students of mine at Carthage where this has been and continues to be a really serious issue. And it also feels like it's an epidemic. It feels like something that is much more common amongst the population. And maybe part of it's that we are more open about it, but it also just seems to be a problem that is escalating in some alarming ways. So explain to our listeners who might not be all that familiar with the term what we're talking about with biofeedback and the difference that it can make when somebody is experiencing an episode.
Absolutely. So biofeedback is just a way to understand your biology in a feedback loop. So if you've ever taken your heart rate, that's a form of biofeedback. You're able to see what your heart rate is at that moment. And if you wanted it to be higher, maybe you're at a workout class, then you might start working out harder. So it can be as simple as that, or just noticing that your hands are cold and putting on gloves. So just being in tune with our biology to then change our behavior to make our lives better.
So it's as though a biological function in your body is observed.
Yes.
And then you respond to that in some sort of appropriate fashion. In kind of the same way that if someone has an issue with insulin and if they have something that some kind of alarm goes off that indicates your insulin is too high or too low, and then you...
That's a perfect example.
So what is the specific innovation that is part of this idea you've come up with called the Calmlet?
So by... There are different characteristics that you can track to determine how stressed out someone is. Some of these include heart rate variability, temperature, sweat. So by looking at some of these variables as they increase, then you can interfere with that rising stress level with different relaxation techniques and different guided meditations, breathing, which can directly interfere with that nervous system pathway. And by doing so, you might be able to help calm some of those levels back down.
So when someone would wear the Calmlet, then what exactly would be its indicators, or what would it be measuring, and what would it be, what information would it be conveying to the person who wears it? Or might that vary from person to person?
It definitely can vary from person to person. So main premise of Calmlet is just that personalized, customized recommendations based on each individual. Because what you might find relaxing, I might not find relaxing at all. And I think it's important that technologies and different treatments are customized to each individual, whether it's in the medical setting or in the consumer setting, which Calmlet would be based in. So for the Calmlet bracelet, it's primarily based in heart rate variability, and that's a direct characteristic that you can look at to determine someone's stress level. So as that indicates an increased stress level, then different recommendations through the app and also provided directly through the bracelet and device will be given to help people calm back down, and that guidance will help them do so.
So on the Calmlet would be some screen, I assume, that would, first of all, give an indication, in a sense, sounding an alarm of one kind or another that something is amiss with your heart rate, that perhaps it's beginning to spike upwards and an indication of what might be coming. And then on that same screen, then words would appear that would, in a sense, be a suggestion for that person for what to do. Is that what you're saying?
A lot of the main premise of Calmlet is to keep it very internal. So if someone is experiencing high levels of stress, the additional worry of, oh, someone else might notice how stressed out I am, isn't necessarily beneficial for that situation. So a lot of it might be vibration-based, where only the wearer would be aware of this signal.
Okay.
And everyone around you would have no idea that you're consciously working on helping yourself get into a deeper state of flow or come back to your sense of concentration or calm back down.
Okay. So it works in a way that would not necessarily be immediately apparent to those around them then. Interesting. Explain the connection with the, you said something about a community-based app that would be part of that. What role does that play?
So from a psychological standpoint, just having the perception of support can change our pathways, can help us reduce our stress levels, can help us go towards a more positive outcome, just because we have that perception of support. I think that's a lot more founded if it's real support. So by integrating people with others nearby, and then also inner circles of family or friends, whoever you'd like to let into that notification system, then when someone is experiencing a high level of stress, or they're just having a bad day, or something happened, they got in a car accident and they just want to feel like someone is there for them, they can send out this distress signal, so to speak, out into the world, and people can vibe back that, just a signal that, hey, I'm here with you, I support you. And just that simple sense of support can help people change their psychology, change their perception to look at maybe the situation in a different light.
Interesting. So is this something that you have, in a sense, already developed? I mean, do you have, in a sense, a prototype of sorts that you have been able to use, or is that sort of the next step that you hope can occur?
So I have prototypes for both the app and the bracelet. The next steps is developing those further, getting those into people's hands, making sure it's the right setup of something that would actually benefit them in their daily life, to make sure that the features that we've included will help them progress forward and be able to do things that without that support might have been more difficult.
Right. So once you get to that step, then you have even more of a sense of the good that this could do.
Yes.
And perhaps by refining it in some way, making it perhaps have an even greater impact. Within what context were you working on this at Carthage? I mean, mm-hmm. Was this some sort of independent project, or was this part of your thesis, or was this something you were just doing on the side in a Frankenstein library someplace, or a laboratory someplace? Or, I mean, in what way was this, if it was, integrated into your regular studies?
It wasn't really integrated into my formal Carthage educational studies, but I did participate in a lot of different local programs and different support systems, taking advantage of those. So, for instance, I went through the Commons, which is an entrepreneurial skills accelerator program up in Milwaukee.
Right.
And that's where I got started with it.
Ah.
I had a team of some incredible students from around the area to help really delve into this idea, see if anybody would even benefit from this to begin with, have those different conversations, interview hundreds of students, and that's how we were really able to define what Calmlet is. Since then, I've also gone through the Gateway Technical College Launch Accelerator Program.
Yes.
And having the support of those mentors, being surrounded by other small businesses, other startups, as they take those next steps forward was huge as well.
Yeah.
And then there's also other supports from Concordia University, for instance, and they had a pitch competition that I was able to take a part of. So throughout the whole southeastern Wisconsin area, there are a lot of supports to help bring new ideas that can make people's lives better. And I think Foxconn will just kind of propel that forward in a much grander fashion.
Absolutely. So for the Foxconn Smart City Smart Futures competition, what did you have to submit to them? What did it mean for somebody like yourself to enter this competition?
So for round one of the Foxconn Smart City Smart Futures competition, it was in an essay form. So just answering a couple of different questions about what your idea is and kind of your plan for how it might roll out into the future. There was opportunity to submit a couple other links if you have a website or different social media channels or any videos or any other things that might be supplemental to help them understand what your idea is.
How long was the essay?
I don't remember. I submitted it back in October, so it's been a couple of months now. It wasn't a super long, in-depth essay, but it definitely was more comprehensive than some other competitions that I've been involved with. But this was just round one as well.
Right.
So for round two, it's a more in-depth essay and a video submission to really delve deeper into your topic.
Wow. And when will that be due?
Round two is due on January 31st.
Oh, so you are busy right now.
Yes.
On preparing for round two of this competition. And I suppose no matter how this ultimately ends up, I should think this has already been a really valuable experience for you in terms of you having to kind of crystallize what this project is all about and really think about potential paths forward.
Absolutely. I think the intersection of science with more innovation and business is an incredible just corner to be in. And my background in science has helped me tremendously in business startup realms. You establish a hypothesis based on previous research and evidence. You test it. You see if people actually like your idea. You see if that's a good marketing strategy. You see just if what you assume is correct. And then based on those results, you can move forward either in that same direction or in a different direction. And my background in business has helped with writing more of a story when writing for scientific papers and things like that, just helping to have more meaning to the different facts and figures.
Sure. And telling the story of what this could mean in the lives of people, which is what that's, of course, all about. Well, we're certainly going to be following with great interest what where this takes you. If things went very, very well for you and you passed on to the next round, what would that ultimately mean? I mean, in a sense, what is at stake in this Smart City Smart Futures competition?
So as a round one winner, Foxconn granted any of the 88 of us a $500 gift card. Round two is $1,500, and round three would be $5,000. So that funding definitely can help further along different prototype development, just deepening the ideas, in addition to all of the connections they have. So Foxconn has partnered with many different resources and centers within Wisconsin that whose main focus is on developing and encouraging and supporting different innovation or technological development, startups, small businesses, whatever it might be. So those partnerships and also just exposure into the community is a huge part of these different competitions.
Marvelous. Well, we're going to watch with great interest. And in the meantime, I so appreciate you taking the time to come to our studios and to tell your own personal story of your participation in the Foxconn Smart Cities Smart Futures project. And we certainly wish you the very, very best as the competition proceeds from here. Best wishes, and thank you again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Erin McGinnis, a Carthage graduate of 2018 in neuroscience and a successful first-round winner in the Foxconn Smart City Smart Future competition. And in part two of today's morning show, I am very, very excited to speak with Carthage's other first round winner in Foxconn Smart Cities Smart Futures. And this is somebody that I know from Carthage pretty well. Her name is Joan Volmet, and she is the receptionist and visit coordinator for admissions. So whenever I am interacting with anybody at admissions with various events going on and so on, Joan Volmet is the friendly face to whom I'm speaking. And when prospective students come to campus, it is often Joan Volmet who is their first contact, maybe the first voice they hear from Carthage and maybe the first smiling face they see. So, but beyond what she does with Carthage's admissions program, Joan Volmet has also been for a number of years now nurturing and sort of slowly hatching a very interesting idea. And that idea is what secured for her a first place win in the Smart Cities Smart Futures competition. And so we're going to be talking with her about her idea, how it first kind of came to her, and a little bit about the interesting journey that this idea has taken her on thus far. Joan Volmet, we welcome you to the morning show.
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having me.
I'm so glad you're here, and I'm really excited to learn more about this. I know kind of the bare minimum of what you have sort of come up with as an intriguing idea. And it sounds like something that probably sprang out of just your experience as maybe a mom doing laundry at home, which is a a task that can be pretty overwhelming and that a lot of people can relate to. So take us to the beginning about the genesis of this interesting idea that you came up with.
Sounds good. Over 40 years of doing laundry for myself and my family, I realized that many times when there's a stain on an article of clothing, you forget to treat the stain, put it right in the laundry, and before it's said and done, the stain is set and the clothes are ruined. Mm. And you go to put on the same thing next time, it's like, oh, shoot.
Or worse.
Or worse.
Yeah.
Forgot to treat that stain. And then what happens is, the clothes get thrown away or...
Or you live with this stain.
Live
that,
with the stain and that, hide it with jewelry or sweaters or whatever.
As someone who has done a fair amount of spilling on himself over the years, I can really relate to this. I absolutely understand what you're talking about. So how long ago would you estimate you first started thinking about some kind of solution to this quandary that you were just mentioning?
Well, I've been working on this project, and I call it the Rima Stain Finder, for over 10 years. And the name Rima came from my oldest grandson. Before he could pronounce grandma, he called me Rima.
Rima.
So when it came to fruition, I decided, okay, that's what it's going to be called, the Rima Stain Finder.
The Rima Stain Finder. Another way to say grandma's stain finder.
A little bit.
So Rima Stain Finder. So tell us about kind of your initial idea, which is not exactly the same as what kind of your newest idea is, but tell us first what you started thinking about. And I think this idea in and of itself is really quite interesting.
Well, phase one of the Rima Stain Finder project began as an idea of a device that would include magnetic pins that emit an audio and visual reminder. And so initially when you get stains on your clothes, you take the clothes off in the evening and throw them in the hamper or down the laundry chute, this one of these pins, and put it on the spot of the stain. Then it can go in the laundry chute or clothes hamper. But then when it comes time to do the laundry, and it could be for yourself or any member of the family, you take the transponder, which would be located probably next to the washing machine. So you take the transponder and turn it on, and then the buttons and pins beep and flash on all the different items of clothing. And then you take the clothing, remember, oh, that's where it is. That may be, blood on the collar from shaving. It could be coffee spills. It could be salsa. And what you need to use to treat that stain. And you would save the pin for next time. And so then the stains get treated by the use of the pins. Phase two of it, which is part of the Smart City Smart Futures competition, is a smart device app, so an app you would have on your phone. So immediately when the stain occurs, you take your cell phone's of date when it occurred, what it is, where it's located. Then through the app, you would set a predetermined reminder notification, so some type of an alarm. And you could set it yourself for once a day, every other day, once a week, to continue to remind you that you have that stain on that article of clothing. So then, instead of the transponder and the pins, when you go to do laundry, you open up the app, and all those different articles are listed there, and you know to treat it right there.
Explain to our listeners what sort of moved you from phase one to phase two, because I think a lot of people, or at least me, I'm hearing phase one and thinking, that's a great idea. I would have been inclined to run with that. Explain sort of the input that you received that got you thinking about maybe an even more advanced way to do this.
Well, my son is the one who gave me the idea for the app. So that was one reason. He said the device is kind of outdated, but I see it as two different markets between the device and the app.
Mm. And so the device could service one population in a sense, and then the app might be something that another sort of person might be more apt to use
exactly.
And be interested in. Okay.
Yeah. And the other reason I moved on from the device to the app is the cost involved in producing a prototype and getting that to market, testing. There's a lot involved with the device. So I'm hoping that through the competition, I'll be able to get the app going, and for a minimal cost of maybe $1.99, generate some income from the app to be able to go back and do the device itself.
Interesting. So what in your background would point to you coming up with something like this? I mean, there's plenty of housewives and house husbands, for that matter, who've been, you know, grappling with various issues of this, but there aren't too many people who would necessarily think in a real kind of technical way about this kind of solution. I mean, do you have some kind of background in technology that would make you kind of a logical person to think of this, or did it just sort of dawn on you?
Just an idea, and then I realized how many stain removal products there are out there, and it's like, those are all fine and good, but if you don't remember to do it, what good are those products doing in your laundry room?
Right, so they're useless unless you remember to apply them.
If you remember, and everybody, you know, how many people say, I'm going to remember. Well, a survey that I had done, 85% of us don't remember.
Hmm.
So we, you know, there's a need for, as a reminder, to do this. And clothes are costly. You don't want to just have them end up in landfill.
Absolutely. I really see the point of that. So I thought one thing that was very interesting that you mentioned before we went on the air is that as you have kind of proceeded with this idea and worked with it, you've actually kind of taken it to a couple of places, including right here at Gateway Technical College, and that you have also sought out different presentations by different groups in which people present ideas.
Mm-hmm.
Ideas, you know, rough, not this idea, but maybe, you know, comparable ideas, mm-hmm, and innovations that people have developed. Just say a word about what kinds of things you learned, or if that ended up being valuable to you at all.
Well, observing the different competitions throughout the area, there's a number of organizations who offer competitions for ideas like mine. I've gone and observed those to see how their other people's ideas are presented. And I find great inspiration from every Sunday night watching ABC's Shark Tank.
Oh, yeah.
Very prematurely in this process, they had an open casting call at the Milwaukee Art Museum. And just for the heck of it, I went and presented for that. But there are hundreds and hundreds of people that attend those. And I realized, and even watching the show, I'm very mature in the whole process. So
Right. They
really like dollars and cents number, and I'm nowhere near that point. So I'm hoping through this competition, you know, maybe I'll get there.
Right. So it sounds like this competition sponsored by Foxconn is perfect for you because it, in a sense, gives you a bit of seed money that allows you to maybe secure some professional or semi-professional assistance and kind of get this rolling. Do you ever think very much about the importance of safeguarding your idea? For instance, at some point, does it make sense? And maybe have you already even thought about or begun the process of trying to secure a patent? Have you talked to anybody about if and when that would be an appropriate thing to do?
I already have received 2 patents on the idea.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Can you just say a quick word about how complicated a process that was?
Well, I have a wonderful attorney who must be patient with me, with my idea and everything. And I think she's a young attorney that's just starting in the business, so it probably helps her to, you know, receive, you know, to work towards more patents that she can say, I've worked on these many patents.
Absolutely.
But yeah, so I just received the second maybe in the last couple of days even.
Oh, wonderful.
So, yeah.
Wow, so Grandma gets another patent. So
that's, that's been huge. And that's why I've been also patient with this whole process because you do want to have yourself protected.
Right. And I remember you also saying before we went on the air that one of the ways in which you think of this as maybe something that Foxconn could potentially really be interested in, or that it makes sense for you to offer up this idea in a Foxconn-sponsored competition is the fact that in its latest stage, your idea potentially involves a screen on the washing machine that can interact with this app. And of course, Foxconn, as we all know, is in the screen business. So this might be the kind of thing that would be of particular interest to them.
Exactly. My submission for my idea includes the app, and then like phase three of the whole project is actually having a smart screen on the washing machine where it would have internet accessibility that you could actually pull up the app on a smart washing machine and have all the information right there. So you wouldn't need your cell phone device. You could use the smart washing machine.
There you go.
And then further down the road, I'm thinking, you know, when you go to a dry cleaners or a laundromat, what do they do? What's their process of stain removal or marking stain removal? Right now, they either pin a piece of paper or stick a piece of paper.
Which seems so antiquated. And that seems like the Flintstones, and what you've come up with is the Jetsons. I mean, in terms of...
That's a good analogy.
Yeah, something pretty fancy. It's con competition, the first competition you have entered with this idea?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Were you at all hesitant? I mean, what was sort of your emotional state as you finally... check the box or sign your name or whatever it whatever you had to do to actually officially enter this? Did you do it with much trepidation, or did you had this idea stated it long enough that you were ready and willing and eager to do this?
I think the timing was right. The idea was there. The timing was right with the Foxconn and with coming to southeastern Wisconsin and just their whole screen initiatives that they do and TVs and everything. I think the timing was right, and that's why I thought, what have I got to lose, right?
Very good. Well, nothing, as it turns out, as one of the first round winners. We just have a little over a minute left. Can you just briefly say now, for the second round, is there anything further that you are having to do?
Definitely. First round, they required a 300-word essay. And this round, they require a 500 to 1,000 word essay and a 2-minute video.
Mm.
So I'm working on the 2-minute script right now and the essay, which is has to be submitted by next week, Thursday, the end of the month. So.
Oh, boy. And here we are taking precious prepper time away from you. Well, I'm delighted that you enjoyed this initial success in the Smart Cities Smart Futures competition, and certainly wish you well as you finish prep for the next round.
Thank you.
Wherever all of this ends up going, I think you've come up with a really intriguing idea that could ultimately make a really big difference to all of us who like to spill on ourselves. Spill on, we don't like to, but we just do it a lot. And this could really make a difference. And so I think it's a fascinating story. And I'm really appreciative of you making time to come share the story here on The Morning Show.
I appreciate it. And I mean, just keep in mind that this round also, they need more statistics and more numbers and things like that. So think of it this way. I'll conclude with this.
Yeah.
One garbage truck of clothes fills a landfill or is incinerated every second in our country.
Wow.
So think of how many clothes end up in landfill or in an incinerator.
Because we haven't properly treated the stains.
Well, you know.
Yeah. Wow. Well, on that encouraging note, Joan Volmet, who is the, again, receptionist and visit coordinator for admissions at Carthage and budding inventor on the side, thank you for being part of The Morning Show. This was a real pleasure to hear your story.
Thanks for having me.
Monday on The Morning Show, we're scheduled to welcome into our studios Dr. Art Sear, Clawson Distinguished Professor of Political Economy and World Business at Carthage. paying his monthly visit to the program to offer his analysis of current events and topics. We hope the weather will permit his visit to the morning show on Monday. We'll tell you more about the weather in a second. Support for WGTD comes from Jack and Drea, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, newly reimagined for 2019. A unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. More information is available at jackandrea.com. Jack and Drea, a proud supporter of WGTD's Morning Show. And we remind you that the Morning Show is archived on our website, wgtd.org. This is WGTD.